My name is Vladimir Melovsky, and we are going to talk today about preparing for exam 7345, which is designing and deploying Microsoft Exchange Server 2016. So we are going to be cover like the topics that you should get questions on the exam and some instructions how to prepare for them and where to find the resources for learning. Okay, so from the name of the exam, you will see two areas, which is designing first, and then deploying Exchange 2016. Designing means that based on given scenario, you have to design a solution. For example, based on number of the users and the type of the users, you should design how many Exchange servers you're going to deploy, and on which locations are you going to deploy them, if it's a company which has multiple locations throughout the country or throughout the world. So based on each scenario, you create a design. Then one design is finished and documentation is produced, you can go ahead and deploy Exchange 2016. So deployment can be greenfield, which means the company didn't use Exchange server at all. And it can be upgrade, which means support a scenario from upgrading from previous Exchange server version. So these are the six areas of questions that you're going to, six area of topics that you are going to get questions on the exam. So one of them is plan, deploy, manage, and troubleshoot mailbox databases. So the mailbox database is the location where Exchange stores all the user data. So the mailboxes and the public folders, so all that information is stored in the mailbox databases. So we have to have a good understanding on how to plan for the mailbox databases, how to deploy and how to troubleshoot. The next topic and the next area of questions would be client access services. In 2016, the client access server is not present anymore as a server role, so there is only a mailbox server role in the internal server deployment. So the client access service, the client access server is now client access services inside the mailbox server role. And the third type of the role, which also existed in the earlier versions of Exchange, such as Exchange 2010, was a transport server role, now converted to transport services again in the same role. By the way, how many of you have already deployed 2016? Good. 2013? Okay. And 2010? Okay, excellent. So these three areas are the very important in Exchange 2016 because those three areas focus on the components that were existing in the previous Exchange server roles. So the mailbox databases, which in 2010 were handled by the mailbox server role, client access services, which were handled in the past in 2010 from the client access server and partially in 2013 with the client access server, and the transport services that were covered by the and handled by the transport server role in 2010, by the both client access server and mailbox server in 2013, and 2016 completely the transport services are in the mailbox server role. So having all the internal services located just on one server give us a lot of more, it makes our job to do design and deploy much more easier because we don't care anymore how many client access servers do we need, how many transport servers do we need. So we just need to design a solution and scale it with the appropriate number of the mailbox servers. Still, we will have to know the edge transport server role design and deployment procedures. How many of you is using edge at the production? Okay, not many. Still, for the exam, you will know how to deploy it and how to design solution with edge transport server role. So once we configure with those, we complete these topics, the next is planning, deploying, and managing infrastructure, which means how to install, how to deploy Exchange servers, how to upgrade from the supported version, previous version of Exchange Server, how to create recipients or move the recipients, and how to configure security settings. The fifth area of questions we will have on the exam is the compliance, archiving, e-discovery, and auditing. And these types of the options are not present much in every company. So mostly the company that use those are company that work with sensitive information, such as banks, government institutions. And still, we will see how to learn about this and how to test those features so that we'll be ready for the exam. And the last of this is coexistence and hybrid scenarios. So how many of you have taken Office 365 exam? Okay, so for MCSC messaging, the Office 365 would be one of the paths that you would start first. So MCSA on Office 365, and then having this exam that will bring you to MCSC for messaging, or the new announced this week productivity, MCSC productivity certification. So if you go and pass Office 365, many of the areas of knowledge that you will have on Office 365 exam will be already known and very familiar to you, because the Office 365 also have hybrid scenarios, so you'll have to know how to move your resources from Exchange on-premise to the Office 365. So let's go with the first area of the topics, which is mailbox databases. So here we will cover a couple of the things that we will need to know. So planning for mailbox databases, which means how many databases we will need to know, we'll need to have and to deploy for our organization or for a given scenario you get. Then high availability for the mailbox servers, now much more simplified comparing to 2013, because we only deploy high availability for the two types of server roles, which is mailbox server roles and edge transport server roles. Then what if those high availability components are deployed in multiple cities? So we'll see that into the topic called Site Resilient Database Availability Group. Then we'll go through the topics needed to know for monitoring and troubleshooting databases, and at the end, creating backup strategies. So the first key area of the question that we might get is the mailbox databases. So first of all, planning for the database size and storage performance. First, we have to know the differences between the standard and enterprise edition of Exchange 2016, which means that standard is limited to 5 databases, and enterprise up to 100 databases. Be careful if you have been working with 2010, so if you have experience with 2013, you are aware that there is no more public folder databases. So if that any question refers to creating a public folder database for deploying public folders in your organization, then that question is the answer about creating public folder database is not correct. So public folder database doesn't exist anymore since 2013. So there is only one type of the mailbox database. Then planning for storage performance. We will see later about different storage types that are supported in Exchange 2016. One of the key tools that you might be asked about storage performance or planning for the mailbox databases might be storage calculator. So mailbox storage calculator, how many of you have been using that tool? Okay, so this you can find a URL on the Exchange Team blog, which is one of the very good resources for learning as well. So Exchange Team blog announces any new information or talks about any specific topic which might be interested. And they have good topic which is called Preferred Architecture for Exchange 2016. I really encourage that you go on the Exchange Team blog website and read the preferred architecture article Also on channel 9, channel9.msdn.com, you will find many events. So you will find the sessions from this Ignite and from the last year Ignite. One of the sessions you would like to get and get the PowerPoints from there and listen to that session is called also Exchange Preferred Architecture. So one of the biggest advices is that we try and see a little bit how this calculator, mailbox storage calculator works. Then planning for mailbox database capacity and placement. The formula for the capacity is again into the storage calculator. So the only thing here that you would know is that you should use storage calculator for planning the mailbox database capacity. And it is good to know how much data is stored into the mailbox database, like if you have number of the users and the average limit of the user per mailbox, and additional capacity based on the deleted item rotation per each user. Now, placement of the databases. In the preferred architecture article and session, you will see that now Microsoft encourages users that they put the mailbox databases on the same logical drive. So it doesn't necessarily need it that you separate multiple databases on multiple disks if you have that kind of scenario. So the performances are optimized and increased for the databases that are stored on the same logical disk. This is under assumption that we have highly available mailbox infrastructure. So we have copies of all the databases everywhere throughout the mailbox DAG members. And the biggest performance in replication is achieved and in the user experience is achieved by having multiple databases on the same logical volume. The archive mailboxes can be stored on the same place where the primary mailbox is, or on the different mailbox database. So this is depending on the scenario if you have assigned some disks that have slower speed, that this can be an option that you put the archive mailboxes on the appropriate separate database. Now, public folder capacity and placement. Again, be careful, no public folder database anymore. And you have in public folders, you have primary hierarchies and secondary hierarchies, and the public folders are not read-write, like they are not multi-master anymore. They are single master only. You have to know which technologies for storage are supported. So storage area network, direct attached storage, RAID arrays, and JBOD. So we should be careful about the JBOD scenario because the JBOD disks are recommended only in a certain scenarios, which means, according to the Microsoft recommendations, you have to have at least 3 DAG members, so 3 copies of each of your mailbox databases that you can use JBOD, because JBOD is the RAIDless disk configuration. So the disks are not highly available. So having in mind that we have at least 3 copies of the same databases, then JBOD is a reasonable solution or acceptable solution for the organization. So let's say if we have a question about deploying JBOD on a deployment which has only 2 DAC members, JBOD would not be acceptable at all. Also, how many of you have been reading like for logged mailbox database copies? Okay, we will talk about it a little bit later when we talk about the high availability. File systems. So by default, NTFS is the file system which is supported by all the types of data that Exchange is using. Has anyone using REFS in your organizations? Okay. So be careful, the REFS, Microsoft Exchange, supports putting database files and transaction log files on REFS with integrity check option disabled. So this information is also located on the preferred architecture of Microsoft. So that's why if you get any questions about which data or where to install Exchange, be careful about these NTFS and REFS limitations. Do you have you tried to work without reseed? No? Okay. So first recommendation from me, have your own, if it's possible, have your own virtual test lab. Okay? So the virtual test lab could be, could have like a couple of virtual machines, at least two Exchange servers, at least two domain controllers, so that you can have a little bit presentation of how real scenario would look like. If I go back to the previous slide, you will be in these virtual machines, you could have created different volumes, and then you can format those different volumes in different file systems formats. So you can place the databases on those system formats. So I mentioned auto reseed is the component that was introduced in 2013. So what this component does is actually, if you have a DAG, database availability group scenario, and let's say one of the disks, one of the database copies fails, so the disk fails. Without auto reseed, what you would do is you would come the next morning realizing that one of your copies is down because the disk has failed. You will replace the disk with a new one, and you would start again replication. So you would reseed the database manually. Auto reseed has capability to detect that disk has failed. Prior to configuring auto reseed, you have to map a free logical drive. So you assign that drive to Exchange so that Exchange knows that it has spare drive. So let's say if in the middle of the night the disk fails, Exchange will automatically start the reseed process to this reserved new drive. So when you go at work in the morning, you will see that the disk has failed, but that the Exchange started the reseed process of the new disk automatically. So the auto-reseed process is explained on the TechNet web page of Exchange 2016. And it has the process of how it is configured. So you have to create a couple of folders, do some disk mappings. So the disk should be mapped on separate folders. So the whole procedure is explained there. And the best way to learn about it is just follow the TechNet article and just deploy auto-reseed. What I want to warn you as well, the auto-reseed takes some time. So don't be disappointed if you, let's say, you simulate the disk failure and see that nothing happens, because it has a specific procedure on how, on which time schedules it starts. So after some amount of time, maybe you'll have to wait about 50 minutes until auto-reseed to start to work. So if you have option that you create your virtual lab, it would be great that you test this feature. Also, if you don't have ability to have virtual lab, there are TechNet virtual labs that you can try. However, having your own lab gives you the most flexibility because you can test any scenario you want. The Microsoft team have written article for the virtualization recommendations as well on their blog. One of the things you have to remember is, let's say if you use Hyper-V for virtualization, Exchange doesn't support dynamic memory. So I guess that feature in different virtualization products has maybe different name, but generally Exchange doesn't like that the memory is taking away from it and giving back to it and so on. So the memory assigned to a virtual machine where Exchange runs must be static. Okay. Of course, if you need to add memory later, you can shut down Exchange Virtual Machine, add memory again, static, and bring up the machine again. But dynamic memory is not supported. Also, the virtual disks that are assigned to Exchange Server also have to be static, which means if you use Hyper-V, no differential disks should be used. That scenario is not supported for the production. Snapshots also by Hyper-V or checkpoints in 2012 R2 and the late and the newer operating systems are not supported for the production. So be careful about those limitations which are needed for the Exchange to work on a virtual machine. Now, storage design by using JetStress. So JetStress is a tool that needs to test your storage solution against given scenario. Here, what you would have on the question is that you should take care of, you should be careful about the fact that JetStress should be run in non-production scenario. So you don't run Exchange during your production in order that you see how your Exchange works, because JetStress is really disk-intensive operation. So this is the tool we run on the against the storage, not in the production. Creating and configuring mailbox databases is pretty straightforward process. So you have to answer the name about the name of the database and the location of the database. Then if you have your own virtual lab, you can just open the properties of the database and take a look of the what options could you configure. The way actually I prepare for the exam is just I open up, if this is listed in the objectives of the exam by Microsoft, I just go to this topic and let's say for creating and configuring databases, I create a database and I see which options I can have to set. Having a practicing in my virtual lab, these topics such as creating databases helps me memorize how the user interface look like and which options do I have. Maybe, of course, it's not possible that you memorize everything from the user interface, but if you have a little bit practice, you would be able to think, let's say, from the couple of four answers, you will be able easy to eliminate some answers which you are sure they are not correct. So you'll see, oh, I have seen this checkbox, but I'm sure like the text was like this, and then you answer that question. Then it is good that you use PowerShell logging so that all the commands you execute in the graphical environment are translated into the PowerShell, because some of the answers you will have to provide is choosing from the PowerShell options. Now I know that knowing all the PowerShell commands is not possible. But again, practicing how some common tasks are executed in PowerShell will help us remember at least the logic how the configuration is done. And that would help us also to answer appropriate questions. It will help us to eliminate the questions we are sure are not correct. Configuring transaction lock properties and file placement. Exchange preferred architecture now recommends having transaction logs on the very same location where the database is. This is only if you have high available mailbox infrastructure. If you have a single server, this is not recommended at any way. So be careful on the question, is it a single Exchange 2016 or it is a DAG infrastructure? If it's a single, separating database files and log transaction log files will help us a lot in a case of some of those two disks goes down. If, let's say, the database disk goes down, we will return from backup and all the transaction logs will reapply them. We will replay those transaction logs which are located on the other disk. In high availability scenario, we already have a copy on two or three or more servers, so there is no need for separating these files. So the preferred architecture is in highly available infrastructure that we put databases and transaction log files on the same location, on the same disks, and all the databases on the same disk. Also, if you want to move the transaction log files, same as in 2013, there is not an option that you move transaction log files with using the graphical console, so the Exchange Admin Center. You have to use PowerShell. Now we talk about high availability questions. So one of the things, even in reality, when we want to create a high availability solution, is to identify failure domains. So what is failure domain? Any component that, if it's not available, the system will not work. Sometimes they are also called single point of failures. So what can happen? The disk can go down, the server can go down, the site can go down, the network can go down. So all these failure domains should be addressed with appropriate scenarios. Then you might be given a scenario on the exam which talks about SLA, service level agreements, which means the agreement and document that says how many percentage of the time during the month or during the year the system should be running and providing the services. You should know how to apply the update. You know that in Exchange 2016, same as in 2013, there are no more service pack, at least not officially, but they're all called CUs, cumulative updates. So you should know how to apply them, especially in the high availability scenario. Now, how to create the high availability? We are talking now about high availability for the mailbox server databases. We will talk about high availability for the edge transport servers later. So having the lab in our virtual lab in our environment will help us a lot in order that we know how to create and configure database availability group. So we have to know the prerequisites of creating the database availability group. Then we will have to plan where the location of these DAC members are located. It is good if you know both the PowerShell way of creating the DACs. It is really pretty much the command is self-explanatory, so it's like create database availability group dash the name of the database group and dash the witness server dash the file share witness folder. So all the components needed for the DAC are already written into the command. Then create and manage DAC networks. So by default, the DAC networks actually are managed and configured in 2016 automatically. And according to the preferred Microsoft Exchange architecture, we would use just one network for both replication and for the MAPI traffic. So there are two types of logical networks in the DACs. Microsoft recommends in the preferred architecture that we use just one network. And that recommendation started somewhere in the midlife of Exchange 2013. So, however, we might get question on the exam regarding configuring two networks, so one MAPI network, one replication network. So I would test that in my lab environment. So in my virtual machines, I would assign two network adapters on each machine. Also, you should be careful. Each DAC member must have exactly the same number of the network adapters. So if you decide to create a DAC which will use two network adapters per machine, each DAC member must have the same network adapters. If you choose to have just one, then you have to have just one network adapter per virtual machine. So typically, if you have two networks per DAC member, you should create two subnets. Again, it is good that you test those just in case that you know how to do it. Otherwise, for the production, for the real-life scenario, one network adapter is now what is recommended by Microsoft. Now, where to place the file share witness? File share witness typically You can place it on any file server in your data center. DAG member cannot have a file share witness. And the domain controller can have, but it's not quite recommended that you have the share witness on the domain controller. Now, this question is much more, let's say, challenging if you have multiple sites. So if the majority of your nodes are located into the first site, and the file share witness is also on the first site, and the first site lost connectivity or loses power or anything, then the other minority of the DAG members will not work into the second site. So there are a couple of scenarios here. You might be asked to configure alternate file share witness, which is not activated automatically, which means if I have two DAG members per site, and then the witness is in the first site, the first site is down, which means if the alternate witness is in the second site, alternate witness will not be brought up automatically. So there are PowerShell commands that you need to execute in order that you bring that site up. Okay, those PowerShell commands and this scenario is well covered also in the Exchange 2016 TechNet documentation. The new thing that was also introduced in the middle of the lifetime of 2013 is having Azure file share witness. So having this limitation that you have to put the file share witness in one site, the companies that had three sites, three locations, could put the file share witness in the third site. And that would be quite nice because no matter which of the sites is down, the other side is looking at the file share witness. Now, the companies that do not have this third site can take advantage of using Azure Virtual Machine as a file share witness. Also, on Exchange TechNet documentation, this article covers the scenario for Azure File Share Witness. And a short information about the Azure DAG members. So can I put my Exchange Virtual Machine on as an Azure Virtual Machine? So this has been supported lately. The one thing that you need to know for the exam is that for the production, you must use Azure Premium Storage for the virtual machine that is created in the Azure and where you want to install Exchange Server. So once again, I will make the distinction. The first one is Azure File Share Witness, which is just a virtual machine with a file share. The last bullet is if you want to deploy Exchange on a virtual machine located in Azure. So for production, only so-called Azure Premium Storage has to be used. Otherwise, Exchange is not supported in this scenario. So what if I want to deploy my Exchange in multiple sites, in multiple locations, with the database availability group? Some of the scenarios are already mentioned previously. So now we are talking about the mailbox databases high availability in multi-site. After that, we'll talk about the transport and the client access scenarios for high availability. So this is just the databases. So configuring and creating cross-site database availability group would not much be different with if the DAG members are in the same site. Just we have to be careful where do we put the file share witness. Now, there is also an article on the Exchange Team blog about the data center activation coordination. This is also something that was introduced in 2013. And it is just activating this scenario in one with one command. So data center activation coordination actually is only for the companies who have stretched DAG members in multiple sites. And let's say if the witness is in the first site is down, I have to manually bring up the second site. Now the problem is if I bring up the first site again, how will these servers know that I don't have created new DAC already or the new configuration. So there where data center activation coordination protocol works and doesn't start the machines in the first site because you have already recovered the DAC in the second site. So this is the scenario also located into the on the TechNet article on Exchange 2016. Now, testing and performing site recovery, if you have a chance to have a virtual lab with two Exchange servers, one you configure it in a subnet in one location, the other in another location, you will be able to test this scenario, and it is good for you to see how this actually works even into the virtualized environment. So I guess you might need a machine with at least, let's say, 16 gigabytes of memory, so you would be able to have two Exchange servers and at least one domain controller. Of course, the more memory you have for the virtual machines, it is the better because you can test multiple scenarios. Now, once you create your DAC, then you would need to know couple of PowerShell commands that do the monitoring of the replication. So how many of the transaction logs have been replicated from one to another DAC member. Some parameters also should be good to have in mind, like the number of the logs which are waiting in the queue to be replayed into the other copies of the database, or number of the logs that are waiting into queue to be replicated to another site. So all this information are also located into the DAC article or the high availability of mailbox database article on TechNet on Exchange 2016. Now, how to troubleshoot database failures? Typically, what I do is that when I create a DAC into my test environment, I try to simulate a failure. So I have two servers configured in the DAC, and what I do is just In Hyper-V, I just disable or turn off the hard drive of the second server. In that case, I should see how Exchange would react, what will be written into the event logs, and will my Exchange server who has disks online will bring all the databases online. Then I will reassign a new disk and do the reseed of the database. So with this simple scenario, I actually learn what actions need to be performed in a case of the disk failure. Then next I would do, in a two-server DAC scenario, I would, let's say, turn off the server one and see what will happen to server two. And then bring on server one again, and then again replicate the databases from the server one to server two. If you configure your lab environment, you will be able to also practice about the quorum issue. So where it can be happen, where the quorum issue can happen, in the scenario where, let's say, the majority of the DAC members are down. This is also very good to test. Let's say if we have two DAC members with a witness, and we shut down the first DAC member, the first member will still work because the majority is maintained. And I will also shut down the quorum, actually the witness server after that, and I will lose the quorum. So it's good to see what will happen in that situation and how to bring the majority of the servers up again. Okay, and troubleshooting data center activation, also when you have DAC members in the multiple sites, it is good to see when first site goes down how to bring up the second site up in our lab. Now the backup solution. So most of us actually use different solutions for backup, like different third-party software maybe. or maybe they use System Center Data Protection Manager. However, here we have to know what happens to the database that it's backup. So we have to know, as in previous versions of Exchange, that once the database has been backed up, all the database is actually checked for consistency, and the transaction logs that are written to the database are deleted from the disk where it's located. So we have to know how backup works, and it would be good, even maybe not all of you are using Windows Server Backup as Exchange backup solution, it is good just to do some backups and restores for you to see how it works, because you might get a question about that one on the exam. Then quick information, you can check on internet what is RPO and RTO, recovery point objectives and recovery time objectives. So time needed to bring server up and time needed to bring the time that you can, the amount of data that you can recover in the case of failure. Then a logged mailbox database copies, you would need to know when to implement them. So logged mailbox database copy, again, is a scenario that Microsoft is recommended if you have at least 3 members of the DAG. So logged mailbox database protects from the logical corruption. Logical corruption is the corruption that mailbox servers cannot detect, which means if you have DAG replication and logical corruption occurs, in that case, Exchange will not detect corruption and all the databases will be corrupted because the corruption will replicate together with all this data. So logged mailbox database is a database that replication has been postponed, lagged for some amount of time, and it can be up to 14 days. So we have to know how to create a lagged mailbox database copy, which is also located on a DAG member. Okay, how to recover a database using Windows Server Backup, and how to recover Exchange server is also important. You know that most of the Exchange server information is located in Active Directory, not on the Exchange itself. Of course, databases are located on the Exchange server, but the other configuration settings are located on in Active Directory. So if we lose a server for any reason, in that case, there is a command setup/m recover server. That command is good to be known because this is the command that will actually reinstall your Exchange server on some completely new machine. This procedure of recovery server also needs to be known because you're bringing a new machine, so you have to actually create a new machine, reset the computer account in Active Directory, because the new machine has to be joined into the domain with the same name as the machine that has been destroyed. And then we use this setup/recover server in order to install the new server that will be exactly the same as the previous one. The only thing we need to do after that is to reseed the databases or recover from backup. Okay, process for recovering the public folder hierarchy is also described on TechNet, on the backup and on the disaster recovery section of the Exchange 2016. And you need also to know how to perform a dial tone restore. And dial tone restore is actually a process where you need to recover the server, but for recovering the database, you need to wait like 1 day if you have terabytes of data. In that case, dial tone restore gives you a capability of your server to send and receive email immediately. And then later, when you recover the databases, then you actually recover all this data to your users. So each actually backup solution has different kind of dial tone restore scenario. We should read about this one performed with Windows Server Backup. Some simple question from this topic. Now be careful, the question in reality should be much more detailed. So I will make it like more detailed for you here. So your company is planning to deploy 2016, okay? I would say here is planning to upgrade. So we already have some version at the moment. We need to determine the average user profile of the deployment, I would say from the current deployment. So we have some 2013, let's say, and we need to do the upgrade, and we need to check what is the usage profile of our. So two tools you can use to estimate the user profile. Now let's start. Typically you might start answering questions by eliminating. So if I want to use the current storage on the current deployment, then I would not use JetStress, because JetStress is used in non-production. So if you have completely new storage that you want to test. Okay, and Exchange Server Role Requirements Calculator is always a good tool to use it. However, you should check, you will check in the detailed explanation of the question, should this information be taken from your current deployment? So in this case, let's say I would check on the performance monitor and the tracking logs to check how much mails are sent, received from my mail infrastructure, and how much CPU and disk utilization has my current deployment before I want to go to the new server. Now the next topic is the client access services. So deploying client access services, managing mobility, manage load balancing. Now load balancing is the high availability for client access services. With the previous topics where we were talking about database availability group, we covered the scenario of the mailbox database not being available or the mailbox server not being available. But what about, let's say, IIS goes down on a particular server? In that case, since most of the protocols for the client access is HTTPS, in that case, client access would not work, even the databases work perfectly fine. So therefore, we have to think of the solution of high availability of client access as well. And when we deploy the server in multi-site scenario, we have to also plan the namespace. So this we'll also talk about this one. So plan namespace for client connectivity, which means if I use Outlook web app, now the name of the Outlook web app is Outlook on the web. So which name do I use, such as https://mail.company.com/owa? Which namespace will be used for SMTP services, for ActiveSync? Should I use the same name maybe for more simple deployment? Should I use multiple names for different services? Is up to us. Microsoft always recommends simplification of the solution. So we use just one name for the accessing the client access services. The next thing is planning proxy and redirection requirements, which means if I have multiple servers, will I have proxying or redirecting to different sites? So regarding the authentication, you should know which types of authentication are used for different kind of client, and how to discover different type of the connections. You can see from these connections, most of them are HTTPS, which is very, very important. So all these protocols run on HTTPS, except POP3 and IMAP4, which I don't think are used much into the real world environments. Now, Exchange 2016 has a new, actually it's optional, but role, which is called Office Online Server. So it's a separate machine. It is not an Exchange machine. And we should know how we deployed it. Again, some virtual app is the great thing to test this, how it works. Then customizing offline address books is very easily. You can create like your offline address book and create address book policies. This is pretty much similar as in 2013. So if you have passed that exam, you already know how to configure those, and also how to configure address lists. It is good that you test to create multiple OWA policies and mobile device policies, which means different experience for different types of mobile users is available. So it's good to test in your test environment how to do it from the Exchange Admin Center and from the PowerShell. According to Exchange preferred architecture, we should have more simple namespace, which means one namespace for multiple servers for the client access. And there are different load balancing technologies that we can use in Exchange 2016. Beginning from 2013, Layer 4, according to Microsoft, Layer 4 load balancing is just enough, so we don't need to use the expensive Layer 7 low application aware load balancers. You could use them, okay, but most of the time, because it's only HTTPS traffic and the endpoint to the clients is the IP address, in that case, Microsoft says that you can use even DNS round robin as a balancing solution. So you type name of your client access services, such as mail.company.com, and that name has multiple IP addresses where each IP address is assigned to the different mailbox server. So DNS round robin is acceptable solution, and layer 4 load balancer is also acceptable solution. Okay? Of course, layer 7 is supported as well, but not required, not needed at any cost. Now we must be careful if you get any question about Windows NLB as a NLB solution. So that is not possible to be deployed on Exchange servers. Why? Because if you have a DAG, DAG is using the failover clustering services. And NLB services cannot be installed on the same machine where the failover clustering services run. It was possible in 2013, where you had option to separate CAS, client access, and mailbox servers. And now you cannot use Windows NLB if you want client access server balancing. So it has to be DNS round robin or some hardware or virtual load balancer as a separate device. Yes? Yes, so the question is, if we would be asked about what should we choose, layer 4 or layer 7, I would check about the scenario, but most probably it will be the layer 4. Because the preferred architecture is layer 4.
What Ross said yesterday was layer 7, non-affinity.
Sorry?
Ross said it's layer 7, non-affinity. In yesterday,
okay. Okay. Yes. Okay. Mm-hmm. Depends what you are going to be. If it's that the question on the exam, then it would be fine. Or maybe they have updated something. Okay. Then plain site resilient namespaces. Here also you have, according to the preferred architecture, there are two types of site names models, which is bound or unbound. Bound means that if you have multiple cities, that you can be located, that you are located to your closest department, closest data center. And unbound means that no matter where you connect from, you are connected, so the namespace doesn't reflect that location. Having multiple namespaces adds the complexity and adds the cost of management as well. Now, certificate requirements are also important. You have to know what names must be into the certificate. So one of the names on the certificate that needs to be added is how to discover. If in the question you need to configure the auto discover, so you will have what features do you need in that scenario and what names should you put. So you will have to know which names. Yes.
Our wildcard
Sorry.
Our
Yes, it is supported as well. Yeah, so it depends, depending on the question, you will use appropriate certificate. This is some example also, what is the commands? So I will make this question much more clear. On the exam, you will have it much more clear, which would say each, like from these answers, choose each of them represents correct solution. Okay? Because we need to answer now each of these, choose the questions which are correct. Okay? And this is the correct path of the endpoint of the Office Online Server. So the first one is configuring, assigning OOS on appropriate server called MBX. The second one is configuring the OOS for all the servers in the organization. Then we go for the transport services. So how to configure transport services? The transport services now run on the mailbox server again. Be careful, here we have to put into the scenario Edge server as well, if you don't use it, even if you don't use it. So be careful, Edge server is typically, as in previous versions, is typically a workgroup machine because it's located in perimeter network. And you need to know the procedure of deploying Edge server. So installing Edge server, then exporting that XML file, copying back, and then deploying the solution and starting the Edge synchronization. So this PowerShell command about start Edge synchronization, you should also know about them. Now also the thing that you have to know is, I don't think I have them here, it's the connectors. So by default there are 5 receive connectors configured on Exchange 2016. You can easily check them by just logging on to the console and you will see them listed into the mail flow component of the Exchange Admin Center. Check which connector which is using which port. So let's say one of the connector is the client connector that is used only for POP3 and IMAP 4 clients, which like say many companies might not use it, which is listening on port 587. Then be careful about the default receive connector, which is receiving on, is listening on 25. Know the differences in authentication. I have seen many people scaring of seeing that, let's say, default receive connector that is listening on 25 has anonymous settings enabled. This is because when you want directly to receive email from outside, you have to check that anonymous because the authentication, there is no actual authentication between all servers on the internet and your server. So the many of them who has deleted that, being afraid that anonymous access will be provided, were not able to receive email. So there are like 5 default receive connectors, and it is good to know all of them and the ports on which they are listening, what they are doing for, and also know how to create receive connector. Sometimes you get the scenario that the custom application needs to send email announcements to the users, so that you need to create receive connector that will listen only from that server and deliver email to some admins. So we have to know how to create this receive connector. Then creating a send connector also is important that we know. Typically, if you do the upgrades, the send connector is already present. Just you need to configure the source server, so who is sending email to internet. Now, for high availability, it is good to check some of these topics, such as safety net and shadow redundancy. Those components work with database availability group, and those components also provide the high availability of the messages, which means that if you have a server failure, in that case, messages are still stored on the server who survived, and they're resent to the other DAC members. So the messages are not lost because of the sudden server is being turned off or has been down. Know when to use multiple MX records. So how MX record looks like. This is pretty much the same as has been always with the, in the previous exchange servers. So how to configure MX records. MX records are needed for outside, so you create them on the external DNS servers, not for internal DNS servers. And know the parameters of MX records, such as what is priority between different MX records and how it works. We already talked about how to configure the edge synchronization. Again, in your virtual lab, have one edge machine and see how it works. Edge can be administered only using the PowerShell. There is no EAC, there is no graphical console for the edge server. Now, each of these protocols and connectors have their own logs. Be sure that you check those logs, so send a couple of email between your test users, open the logs and see how they look like. Of course, you'll see a lot of information in there, but just try to figure out the logic between the email which is sent and received. Then shut down one server, try to send email and see the logs and the error logs into the SMTP. It is good that you also try to configure TLS to see the so that if the two companies make agreement between each other to use TLS, how it looks like and how the encryption works like. Now, I guess even if many companies use, if your company uses third party anti-spam and anti-malware solution, it is good to check what Exchange has to offer, because you might be asked to configure some option. Now, those settings are all in PowerShell. So it is good that you do a couple of practicing with PowerShell to install all these agents and to try to configure them. So you will read on Exchange TechNet documentation the type of the anti-spam protection. So like connection filtering, where you can configure the RBL providers. You have content filtering, which means that Exchange assign a number of each email. The bigger the number, the most likely it is a spam. How to configure the sender and recipient filtering. This is if you want to forbid someone to send you an email, or you want if you want to hide some addresses by configuring the filtering as well, and configuring the SPF framework. So all these have to be configured into PowerShell. It is good that you just run a couple of examples, or one or two examples of each of them. You will get the point how it works. So it's not difficult at all. Okay, we already discussed those. So how to configure mailbox transport in a multi-site scenario. So this lab where you would have at least two servers in two different subnets will help you a lot in order that you configure multiple subnets. Be careful when you create a lab with multiple subnets, also create two sites in Active Directory. So Exchange is site aware, so it will know how to rewrite appropriate email based on the requirement. Another test question, as I said, you need to know all the receive connectors and what they are doing. So this is the question that says which of the following default receive connectors, we mentioned there are five, accept authenticated connections from the transport service on the mailbox server over port 717. There is also a great article on TechNet which describes all these receive connectors, and you get like a schema how mail flows between the servers. That clears a lot, and it's really easy to learn in that way, because they have pictures for each of the receive connectors. So let's say if you have mail going from outside, it uses the default, which is the connector that receives the email, and then if you send outside, how those services between each other send the email. So here is the answer outbound proxy frontend. This is the topic about the infrastructure, so planning Active Directory for Exchange, configuring, creating objects, configuring role-based access control, and integrate it with RMS. So first, for domain controllers, we need to know that for high availability, we need at least two domain controllers, because Exchange writes and reads in domain controllers. Then if you have multi-site scenario, you must have at least one domain controller and global catalog in each site. Of course, for the best high availability, that would be two per site. If you see in the question read-only domain controller, so read-only domain controller is not used by Exchange, because Exchange intensively reads and writes to domain controllers, so these are not used. And for the setup, you need to know these commands that do the Exchange deployment. Like, you can deploy Exchange by just running the setup in the GUI, but in that case, all these preparation tasks will be done automatically. So it is good that we know setup/prepare-schema command, which is updating the schema with the new Exchange attributes. Also setup/prepare-AD, what is it doing? And setup/prepare-domain. You might be asked a question maybe that you deploy Exchange in multi-site organization with multi-domain organization, and one domain chooses not to deploy Exchange. In that case, you would not use command setup/prepare-all-domains, because that particular domain doesn't want to have Exchange at this moment. So that this Active Directory service should not be updated. So whenever we decide to put an Exchange in a site or in a data center, we have to have at least one global catalog in that same data center. These have been the topics that were pretty much similar in the previous Exchange servers, so we will go faster on these topics. Know how to configure scheduling of the resource mailboxes. Know the differences into the distribution list. It is the same as it was in previous. Then get the scenarios about linked mailboxes when you have merging of two companies. And know how to create and configure modern public folders, which means public folders which were introduced in 2013. Okay, and next, what is the difference between senders and send on behalf? This is something that we need also to know. And also how to configure the mailbox permissions, how to get full access of the mailbox if you want to share some mailbox between multiple people, and how to configure public folder permissions. This can be done also in graphical console or with the PowerShell. It is good that you check about this role-based access control as well, which gives different roles to the, if you have good big company with, you need to separate the administrative task between the Exchange admins, then you use role-based access control. What should you need to learn here? So the two things are the most important. The first thing is that there are already roles. So if you open the Active Directory users and computers, you will see a number of Exchange security groups. So each of these Exchange security groups has a different administrative permission. This is the first thing. The second thing, which is important, you might be asked to create a role. So if those default security groups are not something that is appropriate for your company, you might need to create a new role with appropriate airbag solutions. So know how to configure a custom role and then apply appropriate permissions. This is only available in PowerShell, so know those commands about how to create custom role group. So they might say you need a user who will need to create a mailboxes and manage groups and so on, but not to install a server. So we have to create a role that will match those requirements. This is a topic that covers the security of the disk drives. So I guess if you have been working in IT for a while, you already know what BitLocker is and in which scenarios. If you want to encrypt the disk drive, then we use BitLocker for the Exchange servers. And if you want our users to be able to encrypt or digitally sign messages, they should use S/MIME. Now, this might be a little bit challenging for learning, this RMS in Exchange. Why? Because Exchange provide rules for the RMS. Let's say if you want to stamp some documents, and then you want those documents to be protected, then Exchange can use the RMS to automatically detect those documents and create. Now, configuring and administering RMS is something totally different. So you have to deploy RMS in Windows Server and so on. So I would check here for maybe for some examples only, because they will not be like questions configure RMS in Windows or something. But you have to know to use the templates, appropriate RMS templates that are already created into the Exchange. This is a question which is related to creating a separate address list. It is good that you know this has been the same in previous Exchange versions as well. So this question is about you want to create a custom SMTP email address that includes three characters of the username and first characters of the last name. So G is the given name, and S is the surname. So first name, last name is G and S. So this is if you want to customize your email addresses. Then DLP has been also introduced in 2013. So let's get a couple of information about the DLP. It has predefined templates on protecting some sensitive information. So let's say if you configure some DLP to recognize the sensitive information, then any user that sends email with the, let's say, credit card number or social security number will be recognized and action will be taken by Exchange to this email. So it is good that you try a couple of those policies to see how it works. And something which is also new is this DLP fingerprinting, which means that Exchange is able to recognize different types of templates of the documents. So if this is some, let's say, template with contains user-sensitive information, this kind of document will be treated differently, maybe blocked or warning will be displayed for the user. Also, some settings that also have been available in 2013, such as retention tags and retention policies. So we tag the email based on some criteria, and then based on those tags, the policy will archive or delete email. This might be also useful for the emails that needs to be deleted after many years, so after some amount of time. Know how to create the archive and how to configure the archiving with Office 365 as well. So here for the e-discovery, it is good to use the Exchange Admin Center to know how to search the emails based on some criteria. Let's say if some emails have been send a couple of emails between the users, test users, include some keyword and try to search for that keyword. Be careful, you have to have appropriate permissions. So administrator cannot do that. So on the question, if you'll be asked to perform the search, you have to add yourself or the user who will perform the search in appropriate security group. Configuring mail tips. Mail tips have been around since 2010, so test a couple of way of configuring mail tips. Mail tips can be configured in EAC and organization level. Mail tips are configured into the PowerShell. Okay, and audit logging, mailbox audit logging, and administrative audit logging also should be tested in order to check it. So this is when some administrator accesses some other mailbox or performs some security sensitive information, the information will be logged into the event log. It is good, it is easy that you check this option as well. It's just with a couple of clicks. Okay, administrator can apply retention settings to items and folders in the user mailbox. What is the purpose of applying retention settings? So you will eliminate the one that is the, some of them which are not like this one, cached on client computer or tagged to this, and you will get an appropriate answer. Okay, and these are the, this is the part of the exam that should be known to you if you go to the MCSA Office 365 track. So how to plan hybrid configuration. In this case, I would advise that you enable your virtual lab to have access to internet and that you create a test Office 365 tenant. So by using those tenants, you can try to configure the relationship between your Office 365 and you will try some migration scenarios as well. Okay, and you will have to know appropriate when doing coexistence between Exchange servers in different location and with hybrid scenarios. You also need to know the which servers are supported for migration. So it's 2010 and 2013. And you need to plan the mail flow requirements and what are the steps for mailbox migration from 2010 and 2013. So typically by the recommended path of the on-premise migration, there is some difference between 2013 and 2010. So if you migrate from 2010, and if you want migration without interruptions for the user, then namespace, there should be made, make a change in the namespace from 2010 to 2016. Because 2010, when you move mailbox from 2010 to 2016, the client access must be on the 2016. When you migrate or upgrade from 2013 to 2016, then there is no difference where the client access, the clients connect, no matter where their mailbox is. So the namespace should be reconfigured in 2010 to 2016 upgrades, not necessarily in 2013 and 2016. Now, also there is one article on TechNet which talks about the migrating of the public folders from 2010 to 2016. It's not pretty like small, but you should get the logic how it works, and it is good that you read it a couple of times in order that you are familiar how to migrate the public folders. Typically, there is some procedure because which is in 2010, the public folders were located in a database, so we need to run a couple of scripts in order to do that migration. And this is some question regarding the how to do the federation between the two different companies. Okay, so this might be a little bit more challenging lab. You need to create two separate forests and two separate Exchange deployments in order that you configure the trust between the two companies and do the migration. Okay, there was pretty much plenty of content here. So let's go quick overview about the books. There is a book for the latest 2016 exam, designing the exam reference 7345. And I think they have it here into the Microsoft bookstore. So this can be used as a reference for, this is a good reference for the preparing for the exam. I always recommend having the lab that I was mentioning all the time. Then the online courses on MVA are also available for the, which is good that they can be available all the time and they're like free. One of the best ways that you prepare for the exam to attend those two classes. So there is only one exam for Exchange 2016. And there are two trainings. The first one is administering Exchange 2016, and the second one is designing and deploying Exchange 2016. Why are these? I know they're, like it says, in expensive and time consuming, but you have for each of these topics, you have a detailed lab, and you have an instructor who also teaches you and discusses with you, and you can really try multiple scenarios, and all these objectives are covered. And in the classroom next across this one, there is a measure up test. You can take a look. later. So there is a measure up test on Exchange 2016, and this measure up test helps you to see, to check your current, let's say, knowledge, that you check the questions that you might get. So it is not, if you are not much familiar with the product, then this cannot prepare you for the exam. This is just if you already have learned and tested and so on. So this is just a quick check how much of the topics you know. And the TechNet labs also can be available, that you can try different types of scenario. As I said, the best is if you have your own labs, because you can customize everything, any scenario you want, and you can really do a lot of different kind of testing. Okay, if you have any questions, feel free to ask. I think I have ran a little bit out of time. And please complete the evaluations after this one. It's really important to us. Thank you.